HQ presents The Royal Game by Anne O'Brien. Read by Gilly Bond. The Pastons. The Pastons were a family living in Norfolk in the Middle Ages. They wrote letters to each other, both the men and, even more importantly, the women, Margaret Paston being the most prolific of the letter writers. How fortunate we are that so much of this correspondence, full of detail on family dispute, of love and tragedy, as well as the minutiae of everyday life, was kept intact and can be read today. They open a window for us into the life of a vibrant and ambitious family in the 15th century. Chapter 1. Margaret Maltby Paston. St. Bride's, London, 21st of November, 1444. On the first day of February in the year 1444, the great spire of St. Paul's Cathedral was struck by a bolt of lightning and burnt to the ground.
"Beware the wrath of God,"
thundered our priest from the pulpit in the church of St. Peter Hungate in Norwich.
"Fall to your knees and repent."
What cataclysm did this disaster foretell? It was much discussed in our household. Perhaps another dose of the pestilence to sweep through the realm, winnowing both rich and poor. Perhaps some diplomatic squabble to hinder the proposed marriage of our young King Henry VI to the illustrious lady Margaret of Anjou. No one gave any thought to the fact that it might be the death of Justice William Paston, man of many talents, both meritorious and dubious. In November, John Paston, the heir, and I, Margaret, his wife, were summoned to London, where Justice William lay sick in rented rooms close to the Inns of Court. John left me in a gloomy chamber smelling of damp and disuse, and possibly mice, while he climbed the stairs to his father's room. Since he had left the door ajar, distantly I heard the rumble of his voice, and then his mother's in reply, sharp and reproachful. Mistress Agnes Paston was clearly in command in the sick room. On John's return, only a handful of minutes later, I knew from his face what news he would bring. "He is dead," John Paston announced. His voice registered irritation rather than shock. Certainly no grief.
"My father is dead. We arrived too late."
"We travelled as fast as we could," I said. "There is no blame can be placed at your door, whatever Mistress Agnes says." It had taken us 5 days of hard riding to cover the miles between Norwich and London, and I felt every one of them in my bones. John, as weary and travel-stained as I, beating dust from his garments, would not be mollified.
"No, there is no blame. We nearly killed the horses to get here. I just wish he could have held on for one more hour, or that my mother had sent for us sooner."
"I grieve with you," I replied, accepting that my husband was wont to blame anyone but himself, even though on this occasion he was in the right. Nor would he speak his sorrow aloud, but I would. "Your father will be greatly missed for upholding the law so rigorously."
"There are even more who will not rejoice," John replied. "There will be few who will mourn with me."
The house around us was still, that strange, dry emptiness that death often brings in its train, before the business of the day must take over. Ill health, marked by pains and high fever, had dogged Justice William through the whole of that summer. Death had finally claimed him in its grip, his eyes closed for the last time by Mistress Agnes's busy fingers. John was regarding me in weary contemplation. I knew that I must look as dust-ridden and mud-splattered as he.
"Now that my father is dead, Margaret, it will not be an easy life for us," he said,
as if I needed to be lectured on what must have been obvious to all.
"Or not until I have learned to apply the legal strategy so expensive."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?